We're doing Sefer Midot. We're holding on page Shin Zayin. The Magid Midovna had said, let's analyze the problems with arrogance that are relevant to this world, not the world to come. So firstly, he discussed how arrogance distances people, causes even one's family to feel distant from oneself. And secondly, he says, "Hashenit agava yisibal lesabev elav sinal yedei asher yakel b'chvod acherim." There's a second reason why arrogance is contradictory to good relations with people, and that is that arrogance causes a person to make other people's honor light. Ki avat adam et atzmo v'asher yisna et chaverav yimas b'hem yakel b'chvodam. Because arrogance is self-love, where a person really doesn't love anyone but himself, and then he easily takes their honor lightly. Shol shechad lahem. Really, the two go hand in hand. Ki mishol shnecha shegava yetzei tzefa v'ze kol pri godel levav. Ki kasher yakra nafsho beinav ken tiktan nefesh acherim beinav. Really, he says he's doing a play on words. The verse describes that from the root of a snake comes out a python. So he says the same is true here. When a person takes himself so seriously, he values himself so much, it goes hand in hand that others have less value. What arrogance does is that a person thinks, next to me, everyone's nothing. Efes vato nechshavu. They're absolutely worthless. V'nefesh ha'adam tigal bazot, ki shol yishal ma lo laze, ki lo yachshov mitziut rak mitziuto. And the nature of the average person, we're holding six lines from the bottom, the nature of humanity is that when people encounter arrogance, their automatic response is, what's wrong with this guy? Why can't he think of anyone but himself? Why does he think he's so important? Ven kavod uferak perov tifarto, the only glory, the only honor is his. Lachen b'shad nef shebitu anashim al amitkeya lehem, achar shepriyo mar lehem kerosh velana. That's why people don't take a liking to a person when he's arrogant, because they find it so bitter to deal with such a person. It's counterintuitive. So the first thing he said was that people, even a person's own family, have difficulty dealing with someone who's arrogant. And secondly, he says that even strangers, whoever comes in contact with him, finds it difficult to be in contact with him. And it's very natural to hate someone who's arrogant. Yes?
So if, according to the nature and that the Magen Meduna is describing, you know, that someone who has arrogance and or false confidence, or whatever it might be, is such a horrible trait that it even so goes so far as to cause his own family to hate him and people around him to hate him, and he's just a very bad trait to have. What do you say and or suggest for people who grew up in a certain society on the western side of the world where things such as competition and self pride and everything are valued so much, causing the society to feed off their own arrogance in order to be able to shed this trait that might be so engraved into our psyche that it might still have an effect on us today. How do you get rid of that if you come from such a society like America?
So we have a Rambam. The Rambam describes that when a person wants to overcome a trait, very often we have to act as though we've overcome it. And that's the way, that's one of the routes to get there. So if a person can show appreciation for others, even if he doesn't necessarily feel it, initially he might feel like he's faking it, but with time he'll really feel it. That's step number one. Number two is an honest appraisal of oneself. One is supposed to recognize one's strengths and at the same time recognize other people's strengths. Meaning, If a person can think that way, and I think also if a person invests in other people without trying to take the credit, so then those are actions. Again, they're actions that stem from humility, but they can also create humility.
Invest in other people without taking credit?
I mean that part of arrogance is that a person always wants people to know how great he is. And when a person can do great things and try to keep them to himself, so that's a habit that's the exact opposite of arrogance. That's doing something for the true reasons. And if a person can do that, can try to do acts of kindness, acts that are really worthwhile, and not take credit for them, so then he's developing within himself true value, which is part of the antidote to arrogance. Yes.
So, could you give some examples of arrogance? Because, I feel like you could, be an arrogant person without necessarily insulting other people. Like, you just walk around like you're, a king or something. Or, I mean, I guess what you just said, if you do something good, then you kind of give yourself too big of a pat on the back for it. But I also think, there's a difference between arrogance and confidence. And, I mean, sometimes you do kind of need to, sell yourself in certain situations and be overconfident.
Okay, so we can start at the root, but first we have to realize that things are not all or nothing, meaning it's not either you're 100% arrogant or not at all. There's a large gray area, and we're always working towards one direction, and our nature pulls towards another direction. I agree with you that there's healthy self-confidence and self-worth, and that's not arrogance. A person has to even listen to himself. And in conversation, hear what's he trying to do in his conversation. Very often, a person can notice that his sole purpose in having conversation is to impress other people. Very often, a person can listen to, why did I say it this way? Why was that important for me to say? And that's where a person can see that he's really working to impress other people. That's an unhealthy way to live, and it's an unsatisfying way to live, because a person will never be satisfied that he impressed people enough. A person will never think, everyone really knows how great I am. No, but if a person can find solace, if a person can really find happiness with real worth, with the real value of what he's done, so that's where he starts connecting to true worth. It doesn't matter whether people know what he's done or appreciate how great he is. Now, the greater a person is, the less it matters. You could have a person like Moshe Rabbeinu. You could have a person like Akavya ben Mahalalel, where all the rabbis disagree with him, but he knows he's right. So he sticks to his guns. He has a tradition. Same is true about Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. These people argued against all the leaders of Israel, meaning in their day, all the rabbis held one way, and they held differently. They had a tradition that was different. And they didn't give in, both Akavya ben Mahalalel and Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. It didn't stem from pride, it stemmed from true self-worth. It would have been far more in their interest to give in. They would have each shot up in the ranks had they given in, and neither one of them agreed to, because they had real self-worth. The same is true of Moshe Rabbeinu. Think about it. The man has a stutter. The man can't talk clearly. He's truly humble, and yet he doesn't give in. He could stand up to the greatest king of his time. But that's because he has true self-worth. So I think true self-worth allows one to stand up to challenges. And I agree that sometimes one is in situations where he does have to let the other person know that he's willing to stand his ground and he knows what he's talking about. Humility does not mean to always give in. No. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't give in. You see, in these two examples, these two rabbis didn't give in. Humility includes true self-worth. And I agree that there will be scenarios, like the Gemara says, a person will sometimes come to a town and no one knows who he is. And in order for him to get his agenda done, they have to know who he is. Or in our day and age, you come to a date and the girl has no way of knowing who you are. So if you're going to come there and say, gee, I got a 1600 on my SATs, and my parents are both Harvard graduates, and now I've come to date you. I had a girl do that to me at the onset of the date. Within the first 5 minutes, I got to hear all these beautiful facts about her and her family. And I just smiled. Like I felt it was a little funny because I didn't think that was so relevant to dating. I agree that there are certain aspects of who we are that the other person won't know. And you do have to find a way of sharing it with the other person. I think that when it stems from true self-worth, so then you'll find a gentle way to mention it in passing. It doesn't have to be an in-your-face type of, do you know who you're talking with? No, I don't think so. I think
that serious families don't do that kind of checking.
Depends on the family.
It
depends. Here in Israel, you have.
And usually, someone who would advertise that isn't too secure if that's what you're leading with. All right, thank God, you know. I come from a family, I have a lot of gifts, and whatever, but to go out and to blast that, usually, you know people who really lead with that kind of thing?
I'm saying, but sometimes, if you come to the date, and there are aspects of a person that might never show up on the date. I'm saying if a person does many acts of kindness in hiding and no one knows about it, so then there has to be some thought given, because you want to know who you're talking to. She wants to know who she's talking to. So you don't have to reveal everything and you don't have to put everything on the table, and for sure not on the first date. But I agree that there are times when you're not going to get anywhere if you're not going to discuss it. I think there's time also. I don't think it has to be done at the onset. What he's discussing is a situation where you're being interviewed for a job and they basically want to know your strengths. So I think that in such scenarios, I believe that a good resume and a good recommendation letter should really cover much of what they need to know. Meaning, I've always tried to have a resume that will touch on the points which are the strengths that I feel they need to know, and a letter, meaning a one-page letter, but a one-page letter that will touch on what they really have, what's relevant to them to know. If possible, a recommendation letter. The only problem is that many places won't bother reading your recommendation letters. But I could tell you that one of the things the guys here tend to underestimate is recommendation letters. I often tell the story. We had a student here who didn't finish high school. And he came and studied here for 2 or 3 months. And then he had an illness, which he decided precluded his continuing in the Mahon. I disagreed with him at the time. I felt he could continue longer. It wasn't like life-threatening, but he felt that he can't continue, so fine. He told me he's leaving. I said, let me write you a letter of recommendation. He said, I was only here 3 months. I said, yeah, but you made the most of those 3 months. So I wrote him a very nice letter of recommendation, and I discussed how in the short time he was by us, he took full advantage of the time. He was very responsible. He always showed up on time. He was studious. He showed his intellectual acumen. I wrote a nice 2 paragraphs about his strengths, and I was honest. I wrote that he was here a short time. The guy, till today, to the best of my knowledge, it's over half a decade since then, he got a job in the state mental health institutions without a degree. He didn't even have a GED. He didn't have a high school diploma. And he didn't have anything to show him except for a letter of recommendation from the school he had been in Israel. And they were so impressed. They took him in, and he's been there. Last I heard, he was still there. As of a year and a half ago, he was still there, and he had grown in the job. And ever since then, he did work on getting degrees, and he was moving forward. But I recommend for you guys, before you leave, get a letter of recommendation. Very often, like you say, you don't want to toot your own horn, but you do want the employer to have an appreciation of your strengths. So I found that very often that can really do the trick.
A recommendation specifically for employment?
Either way, I believe that wherever you are, you should get a letter of recommendation, because if you come back after a year or two, they don't remember you. As you're leaving the place, hopefully they like you, and letters of recommendation are always useful. Very often in an institution or even in an employment situation, they don't know what to write, and they'll tell you, you write it, I'll sign it. And you shouldn't shy away from that. So sit down and write it, and you can ask someone else to proofread it or someone else to write it for you, but get a letter of recommendation. Those are very open. Very often they open the doors. I remember at one point I needed certain authorization. I was learning in Merkaz Harav. So one of my family members gave me a good piece of advice. They said, don't just get an authorization. Go to the Rosh Yeshiva and ask for a letter of recommendation. And I listened to him. Until today, I have a letter of recommendation from the Chief Rabbi of Israel, the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav. I needed it for bureaucratic purposes. The government needed to know that I was really learning in the yeshiva. They told me, take advantage of the opportunity. Tell the yeshiva, you need a letter stating what you're doing here, and they should write you a nice letter. So I said, fine, you know what, that's a good idea. So thanks to that piece of advice, I have till today a letter of recommendation from the Chief Rabbi of Israel. It's worth a lot. Other people won't get it. He's not around anymore. I'm saying sometimes we overlook the easy opportunities. You guys are here in Machon Meir. Get a letter before you leave. Rav Bigon, Rav Listman. At the end of the day, you have the letter. You choose whether to use it or not. But it opens the doors, for sure.
In that city, you get hundreds of resumes. If you see somebody on stationary, chief Russian, you look again. You get the interview, and that's all that stuff that you're supposed to do, designed to get you the interview. It's not going to get you. Or if you work for a recognizable company 4 years at Goldman Sachs, whatever you did there, chances are you weren't too terrible a person. It wouldn't have lasted there, you know, doing that. So that kind of stuff, there's no downside to it. And I was mistaken. I said, obviously, date is very different. When you go out for a job interview, there won't be a second date if you don't have it somewhere. You don't have so much time. So to do it without being bragging is the art. But absolutely, everything you say can make a huge difference.
Yes, I'm telling you, I've seen it here. I've seen letters of recommendation open doors. And even places that have nothing to do with religion, they respect a letter of recommendation from an institution at the end of the day. We try to word the letter in a way that's not overtly religious. We speak, like I said, about a person's strengths, being studious, being intelligent, things that an employer wants to hear that have nothing to do with the religious aspect of the school. So I think that's a good way to use it. And I'm saying again, I think that in an opening letter, you can cover a lot of things in a way that's less haughty. Whereas in the interview, it's going to be harder. The pasuk says in Mishlei, Yahalelcha zar velo ficha nochri ve'al sfatecha. Yahalelcha, you should be praised by zar, a stranger, velo ficha, not your own mouth. Nochri, a foreigner, ve'al sfatecha, not your own lips. Now it's much easier if you've written a letter which touches on your strengths, describing, I always like to write the letter in a way that describes how you want to apply those strengths, where you see yourself utilizing those strengths, what service they could be to the employer. And then the employer can come back and ask, okay, how do you suppose this, and where do you think to apply that? Let them ask you. And then it comes out differently, I think.